This week on the Docs to Dads podcast, kids are back to school across the country, and you know what that means, germs. We are starting to see a variety of viral infections and other things spreading around our community. So this week, I'm going to share a few tips on getting through those nasty bugs based on what I've seen in clinic in the last few weeks. This week on the Docs to Dads podcast. Hello and welcome to the Docs to Dads podcast, a health and wellness resource for any dad looking to actively engage with their health, the health of their children, and building a stronger, healthier community around their family. Each week, Dr. Scott, a board-certified pediatrician, will explore topics relevant to child health and how dads can be an active participant in their growth, development, and other issues that affect children and the whole family. Welcome back to the Docs to Dads podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Grant, and today I am talking about back to school, but not in the way that most people do, because as a pediatrician, back to school means colds and viral infections and a lot of other fun infections going through the schools, and it gets to be a very busy time of year for us moving through back to school time and into the winter. In clinic in the last couple of weeks, I've been seeing more and more kids coming in with a variety of different types of infections. And actually, this has been kind of a weird season so far because it's been a very wide variety of symptoms that I've seen, from pink eye to ear infections to strep throat to kids coming in with like rashes all over their bodies. It's been kind of a mixed bag of everything this year, which is interesting and fun for me as a pediatrician, but I think makes it really hard for parents to know, like, what do I do? And is this the same thing or is this something different? How do I tease all of this out? And it can get really confusing when there's so many different things going on. And the relief that I see on parents' face in clinic when I say, like, oh, the kid, the room I just walked out of, they had the exact same story. This is what we're seeing right now in the community. Sometimes can be such a relief for parents to know, like, oh, this is just like normal, and there are other people in our community that are having this same experience. And that makes a big difference for a lot of folks. And so that's part of what I want to bring to you today, is just kind of share a little bit about what I'm seeing and a few little tips and tricks to help kind of get through, manage some of those symptoms, help with knowing, like, when do I need to go to the doctor and get sort of a more formal evaluation? What are the things that we can kind of keep an eye on and go from there? As always, if you're worried about your child, they have a symptom that you can't explain or you're not sure where it came from, it's always, always a good idea to seek a unique medical opinion from somebody who knows you, knows your family, knows your community. I can only share the experience that I've had here in our new community here in Arizona, and I have heard from friends around the country that there's some similar things happening across the country, but always for your own kid, having that relationship with your own primary care doctor and seeking help from them when you're having a challenge can be a big help. So most of these topics could get a full scientific treatment in their own episode. I could dedicate entire episodes to each of these sort of five things that I want to talk about today. But today I want to kind of give you the nugget version of them to kind of help get you through these next few weeks as things are happening in case your kid runs into one of these viruses and you're having one of these experiences, to hopefully have it help you. And then we'll do a full deep dive into strep throat and ear infections and some of these kinds of things over the course of the next few months, probably as we work our way through winter. But I wanted to kind of give you the bite-sized version first so that you have sort of the most useful and practical information ahead of time. And then we can nerd out about ear infections and when should we treat them and when should we not treat them and why later. We'll get to that. So the first thing I want to talk about, because it's not something I think I've ever talked about on the podcast before, and it's something that I've seen quite a bit in the last couple of weeks, is strep, or what we call streptococcal pharyngitis, or what's sort of vernacularly called strep throat. I've seen quite a lot of this lately, more than I've seen in the last couple of years. Just kind of wanted to give you an idea of what to look for to know, like, is this strep throat? Because a lot of folks know that for most cases of strep throat, it's in the best interest of the kiddo if they get tested and treated with antibiotics, because there are actually some complications of strep throat that can be prevented by treating it with antibiotics, like rheumatic heart disease and others, parents frequently come in worried about, you know, the sore throat. And is this sore throat a strep infection, or is it just another virus that's causing, you know, a sore throat for some reason? And so for strep throat, you tend to see the biggest thing is that sore throat, the pain in the throat that can sometimes be associated with some difficulty in vomiting. For younger, like preschool aged kids, sometimes those can present more with like belly pain and vomiting more than sore throat, although they usually have some amount of decreased appetite and sore throat as well. The big thing that separates strep throat from most viral infections is that you don't see a lot of the other like upper respiratory type symptoms. So you don't usually see things like runny nose, and you almost never have a cough. And so if you're seeing those types of things, then the likelihood that it's strep is not zero, but it goes down pretty significantly. And so that's one of the things. And then the other is it's very common for them to have some swollen lymph nodes under the chin or under the jaw. And that can be another sort of sign that you might be dealing with strep. If you sort of feel under your kid's jaw, you can actually kind of feel sometimes those little lumps or bumps, which can sometimes be a little bit tender for the kid as well. If you're seeing any of those symptoms, you know, severe sore throat that's interfering with the appetite, especially if there's not a cough, especially if there's a fever, and then if you feel those lumps or bumps under the chin, those are kind of the big things that lead us down to like, this is probably strep throat. The last thing that we're going to do is take a look at the back of the throat and see if we can see any like little pockets of pus back on the tonsils or the back of the throat. That kind of is the hallmark finding that we see in the back of the throat for strep throat as well. And again, that's something that you want to go to the doctor, get the test done, start the antibiotics, because it can prevent some of the complications of streptococcal infections if you treat it with antibiotics. Next up is pink eye. I hadn't seen this in a while, but over the last couple of days, I have seen more and more pink eye. So it's worth doing a quick review on pink eye. Pink eye, as is in the name, you know, the fancy name for it is conjunctivitis, which is just means inflammation of the conjunctiva, which is the outermost layer of the white part of the eye. And so in order to have conjunctivitis or pink eye, you need that outer part of the eye ball to be red and inflamed or pink and look infected. The presence of what we call in my house eye boogers, but like gunk that comes out from the eye, especially when kids are asleep, that by itself may or may not be a sign of a more mild viral infection. But most of the true cases of pink eye are going to have to include some amount of inflammation of the white part of the eye itself. Even in most cases of pink eye, the cause is a virus, and so the use of antibiotic drops in most cases is not needed. You can usually get by just as well with warm compresses. And if you need something because it's dry and itchy to the kiddo, you can use like artificial tears or other types of ointments to just moisturize the eye and help them feel a little less itchy and scratchy. For the most part, those cases do not need antibiotic drops. This is a place where we tend to overuse antibiotics, in part because a lot of times schools and daycares will insist that kids get put on antibiotic drops, even if it's unnecessary. And so this is kind of a fight that pediatricians have been having in our local communities with the local schools to say like, no, we don't need to put these kids on antibiotic drops. They're going to get better. They can stay home. Like putting them on antibiotics doesn't make them less infectious and it doesn't help them get back to school any quicker. So there's really no reason to put them on the antibiotics at all. The kids who need antibiotics are the kids who have really severe redness, who have just tons and tons and tons of goop sort of constantly coming out of the tear ducts and other parts of the eye, right? Like if you're having to wipe the gunk away from your kid's eye sort of several times an hour, then you might be in a situation where you need some antibiotics. But for the most part, if they're just waking up with some, you know, with their eyelids matted shut because of the gunk that comes out, while they're sleeping, and then after that you don't see any more discharge, the likelihood that that's a bacterial infection that needs antibiotic drops is really, really low. And so trying to hold off on exposing that kid to those unnecessary antibiotics in their eye, and you for the like hassle of like putting ointment or drops into a little kid's eye when they don't really need them is like just a fight that isn't worth having, when sometimes it's a lot easier to get kids to just let you put like a warm compress over their eye or something like that to just kind of drain some of that infected fluid. Next up, I want to talk about the lingering cough. This is probably the most common complaint I've seen in the last 3 weeks, is like cough times 2 weeks, cough times 3 weeks, cough times a million years. Like it seems like everybody got sick, you know, for us 3 or 4 weeks ago was around when kids had their fall break. So everybody was kind of off and had some fun, and then they came back to school and everyone started sharing all the germs that they collected over fall break. And so everyone got sick that week and everyone is still coughing from that infection. This is a really common complaint. And generally what I've seen is that everything else seems to be better, but there's still this cough and it just won't quite go away, and we don't know what to do. We don't know how to get rid of it. In some cases, actually, like seemed like it was getting better. The cough never really went away, but now things are starting to come back. There's a runny nose that's coming back. There's sinus congestion that's coming back, something like that. So what should we do about that? And it's a little bit hard to tease this out. So usually the advice that we give to families on respiratory infections is that that cough can linger for 10 to 14 days. But in a small subset of patients, it can continue beyond that. Generally, what I've seen in these cases is either one, sometimes it is just a lingering cough, and it's always a good idea to get that checked out and make sure that there's not an asthma flare-up, especially if your kid has a history of asthma. It's good to make sure that there's not any signs of pneumonia or those kinds of things, although generally a kid with pneumonia is going to spike fevers or have other symptoms other than just the cough. Most of the time, either they've picked up another virus because it's fall, and that's what happens this time of year, is there's like 12 different viruses going around that are all causing slightly different types of illnesses. And so the cough never quite went away from the first one, but now you've picked up a second one and sick again. And then the other big one that I've seen that sort of overlays with fall is allergies. And so a lot of these kids will have gotten a respiratory infection of some kind, will have a lot of runny nose and kind of get over that illness. And then they'll just continue to have this allergic reaction to grasses, trees, and weeds that are common in their area, and have some more constant nasal discharge that's going down the back of their throat, and especially at nighttime and first thing in the morning will cause them to have some really severe like coughing fits, sometimes even coughing so hard that they're throwing up. And a lot of times what I'll see when I look is just like there's just tons and tons of mucus and gunk that's going down the back of the throat instead of out the front. And sometimes that can be a sign to me that there's some allergies that are going on that we can treat with allergy medications to kind of take that mucus away. And a lot of times that will resolve the cough. This is also a situation where as you're trying to get rid of this cough and make it go away, with or without the presence of the allergies, things like cough drops for kids who are old enough to use those, or the cough drop lollipops, which is a $1 million idea that I wish I had come up with, which is fairly genius, or the use of like humidifiers to help make sure that the kid's airway isn't getting too dried out at nighttime, can help sort of with the healing from the infection and help that cough get a little bit better. A lot of times what will happen is you'll get some congestion either from allergies or lingering congestion from a respiratory infection. And so kids aren't able to breathe through their nose. And so they're breathing through their mouth instead. And all night they're breathing through their mouth, which dries out their throat. And so when they wake up, they've got this dry, itchy throat, and a cough will sometimes emerge from that. Again, it's a good idea to have this checked out by your pediatrician, especially if there's symptoms that you're concerned about or something additional to the cough, either in the medical history or in your kid's current symptoms. But generally speaking, that lingering cough is something that we've seen in the community quite a bit. And so you want to make sure there's not something else going on that needs to be addressed. But sometimes that cough can linger for up to 3 weeks, and that can still be normal. Next, I want to do a quick review on ear infections, because I do see that pretty frequently. And a lot of times what I'm seeing right now is kids are getting upper respiratory infections first and then seeming to get better and then having onset of fever or severe ear pain or something like that that turns into an ear infection that then we need to do something about. So a lot of times what can happen is you get a cold, an upper respiratory infection, and there's a lot of swelling, and the fluid that naturally happens behind our eardrums in our ears, that's supposed to drain down a little tube called the eustachian tube out of our ears, kind of gets stuck there. And the eustachian tube doesn't drain the way that it's supposed to, either because there's swelling that pinches off the tube or something else that happens. And so that fluid just sits there, and it's sort of the perfect little place for bacteria to overgrow and cause an infection. And so the kid gets the cold first, and then as that fluid is sitting there, it takes a few days for that ear infection to develop over the top of that. And so a lot of times that's what we'll see is a kid has been sick for a while, and maybe they even came in for that illness and they said, everything's fine, the ear looks good. Maybe there's a little fluid there. I always warn parents when I look in the ear and I say, I see fluid there, but it's not infected, but it could get infected. Just to kind of have an idea of like what could be coming down the road in case something changes once they go back home. And so then those kids come back in because they're having fevers or they're localizing to a particular ear and having pain. And we look in and sure enough, there's an ear infection there. The most important thing, especially if they're having a lot of pain, is try to get that pain under control, manage the fevers with antibiotics. But different from streptococcal infections, the most likely cause of ear infection is a different type of bacteria that actually doesn't have quite as many complications as the bacteria that causes strep throat. And so there's data that exists, and in fact, in Europe and other places when they process this data, that says it's probably less important to treat ear infections with antibiotics than a lot of the other bacterial infections that we treat, because a lot of these, one, are actually viral in the first place, and two, even if they're bacterial, they tend to self-resolve. You know, once that eustachian tube can drain, all that fluid drains out, and the body can sort of fight off that infection on its own relatively effectively, especially in the area where most kids are getting their pneumococcal vaccines and their Hib vaccines, which are number one and two in terms of causing ear infections. And so kids have the immunity that they need to fight off these infections, even in the event that they get one of these infections. Giving antibiotics for these types of infections are less important. Now, there certainly are situations where we would treat them, certainly in young kids, like any kid less than 6 months with any type of ear infection, we tend to treat with antibiotics just to be on the safe side. For kids who are less than two, who either have ear infections on both sides or who have ear infections that are causing severe systemic symptoms, so a lot of pain, a lot, high fevers, interfering with the ability to sort of eat and drink well and stay hydrated, you know, to keep those kids out of the hospital, we'd treat them with antibiotics as well. But for most kids above the age of two, especially if the ear infection is only happening on one side and if the pain is sort of manageable with just pain control, probably you could get by without exposing that kid to antibiotics and not have to deal with too many complications. There's a whole, we'll go into a deep dive on this at some point in the future. The main complication that we worry about with ear infections is that it will spread to the mastoid bone, which is the part of the skull that lives right behind the ear, right adjacent to the ear. But the risk of that is really, really low. There's actually an interesting story about the way that we treat this in the United States versus the way that they treat it in Europe, and the fact that that was based primarily on the exact same set of data, just interpreted in slightly different ways. So that'll be maybe an interesting sort of journal club / ear infection episode that we'll do at some point in the future. And then last, I want to talk about when can kids go back to school, because this is a super common question that I get, especially in the post-COVID era. Every school is going to have their own individual policy for when kids can go back to school, especially if they test positive for COVID, which in our community, we're not seeing too much of currently. We had a little bit of a bump a couple of weeks ago, but for right now, we're not seeing too much of. But every school is going to have their own policy on that. And I think that has also led a lot of schools to develop their own policies around like how long they want kids to be out of school for certain types of infections or sort of what criteria they need to meet to come back to school. Some of the schools are doing a good job of reaching out to their local pediatricians and engaging them and making sure that those recommendations are based on something that looks like the best available scientific evidence, but not all of them are doing that. So they might have their own rules and their own idea of when they want kids to come back. But as a general rule, what I tell parents and what's common, you know, recommendations across most pediatricians is if your kid's having fevers, they need to stay home from school. The kids need to be fever free for 24 hours before they go back. And if they have a type of infection that requires antibiotics, it's usually after 24 hours or so of antibiotics that they're also able to go back to school. And so those are kind of the two big general rules. And the last one is a rash. So if your kid has a rash that has fluid-filled bumps in it, we usually like to wait for those fluid-filled bumps to crust over before kids go back to school. I've seen a couple of kids with really diffuse rashes in the last couple of weeks as well. Most of the ones that I've been seeing lately have not had any kind of fluid-filled components. It's mostly just been like red bumps all over the body. So in those situations, you know, we work really hard to get the itching under control if that's part of it. But generally, the infectious part of that rash is not anything related to the rash, but is more related to the runny nose or other symptoms that the kid has that's associated with the rash. So you just have to be extra careful about sharing forks and spoons and straws and toothbrushes and those kinds of things to avoid spreading that around the house and around the school. But the rash itself generally is not sort of directly transmissible or infectious to other kids that are there. Anyway, I hope this has been a nice sort of couple quick nuggets about common infections that we're seeing in the community right now. Probably they're fairly common in the community that you're in as well. These are happening all over the United States. If there's a particular type of infection you want to hear more about, one of these little nuggets that you thought was particularly interesting that you want to hear more about, please reach out to me on social media. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at docs2dadspod. Shoot me an email, docs2dadspod@gmail.com, or find me on LinkedIn at Dr. Scott Grant or at the Docs to Dads page. If there's another topic that you'd like to hear about, I'd love to hear about that as well. We are working on kind of the plan for our next 3 to 6 months of episodes right now. So if there's something you want to hear about, something we haven't covered yet, you know, I'm actively looking for some dads to share their experiences with the healthcare system. So I've got a couple of those folks that I'm hoping to reach out to soon to get them on the podcast. I want to do another deep dive into ADHD because I know that episode was my most popular episode by far that I've done. I want to also do some stuff on autism, when to be worried about autism, what kind of resources you should be looking for, those kinds of things. So I'm trying to find some experts to bring on to talk about that. And then we'll talk about my own experience. And again, I'm looking for a dad who has a child with autism who might be interested to share their experiences as well, because I think that's a voice in the podcast that I'd like to bring in that I haven't quite done yet. And so that's one of my big goals for the next 6 months. As always, I'd like to thank Phil Raban for editing the show, making it sound so good for you each and every week. And lately, I've been really stressing him with some quick turnarounds on recording and getting these episodes out because we're trying to find our new routine here in our new home. So I'm really grateful to him. This podcast could not exist without him. And I'm so grateful to him for all the work that he does to make this happen. I want to encourage you to tune in next week where I've been plugging this a lot, but I'm ready to finally do my full book review of The Intentional Father by John Tyson and talk a little bit about the lessons that I took away from that book, some of the stuff he recommends that maybe isn't quite so practical, but there's some really good stuff in there that I think would be, you know, helpful to take away and that all of us can apply to the way that we interact with our kids each and every day and think about like how do we raise them intentionally to be the adults that we want them to be. Until then, remember that what you do as a dad matters. Keep building healthier dads, happier kids, and stronger communities. Thanks so much.
The information included in this podcast and other Docs to Dads platforms is intended for your education and entertainment only. It is not intended as medical advice and should not replace a relationship with a primary care pediatrician or other provider who will give the most appropriate recommendations for your individual situation.
Thanks for listening.